In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, an outdoor enthusiast, or a, it says here, a tall comedy icon with flowing ginger locks and a love of American history. Hey, that's me!
Oh, okay.
I think it's me.
Flowing ginger locks?
Nah, they went too far. Anyway, whatever you
icon?
Are, you'll that's the part you objected to, was the locks? You'll find what you came for in Williamsburg, Virginia, from roller coasters and water parks to hiking and kayaking. Williamsburg is great for thrill seekers of all kinds. If you want that thrill, it's also one of the East's premier golf destinations and a city with an emerging food scene to satiate any appetite.
I like food.
Yeah. You know, I say for your next vacation, visit Williamsburg. Just do it. What are you thinking? Come on. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. Interesting. Mm. That's why you need Robert Half. Yep. I don't think that's a person. That's the company.
Okay, I was confused.
Yeah, their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI. Welcome to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing, and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. See, at Robert Half, they know talent. I wish I had had Robert Half back in the day when I was hiring.
Okay.
So, no offense, Sona.
Oh, I feel like you did mean to offend me.
Yes, you wouldn't be here if I had had Robert Half. Okay. Visit RobertHalf.com today.
Hi, my name is Sean Penn, and I feel relieved to be Conan O'Brien's friend.
Yes. You think you've had life-altering experiences up until now, but no, you will never be the same after this conversation.
Which is why it's a relief.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello, I'm Conan O'Brien. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I put the pause in there just for dramatic effect. I didn't forget the name of the podcast. That was me doing a little something, a little piece of business to create some tension right at the top.
It's cool to do it and then talk about it.
Yeah. It kind of deflates it.
Yeah.
I understood that Sona was being sarcastic, Gorley. I didn't need you to interpret it.
I did not understand she was being sarcastic. I thought she was giving you a legitimate note.
Right, yeah. That she thought it was really good. No, Sona all the time has a very simple comedic style, which is, wow, Conan, you looked so cool when you bought that gumball out of a machine and it fell on the floor. And I know that that means it didn't look cool when I tried to get the gumball out of the machine and it fell on the floor and I chased it like Jerry Lewis.
That's my comedic style.
Yeah, your comedic style.
Being sarcastic.
It's very simple. You just say the opposite of what happened. Gee, Conan, I'm so satisfied with my salary. And I know what that means. I know you think it's code.
Yeah.
But I know that it means you're unsatisfied with your salary.
Yeah. And then I always followed up with, give me more money. And
yeah. I was an innovator because I hired Sona 11 years ago, Sona. And
12.
I started 12. Well, I mean, 11 years of work. There was a whole year there where you just goofed around. I mean, aggregate, you know, if you added up all the hours of you watching reality shows at work.
That's actually very generous.
You know what? I was thinking, as I said it, I was like, oh my God, that's the kindest thing I've ever said to you.
It really is.
But you know, I started, remember Sona when I said, it doesn't even really exist yet, but I'm going to pay you in Bitcoin, remember? And you didn't understand, but we agreed to it. And I've been paying you in Bitcoin for 12 years.
Yeah, and I don't know what to do with it. Can you please explain to me how Bitcoin works? I'd love to hear about
it. Well, trust me, you don't receive it and you can't see it in your bank account, but you've been very well compensated for your work with me in Bitcoin.
So how did you do it, though? I really want to know about your process in paying me with Bitcoin.
Well, you know I'm a tech savant.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
How am I going to explain this to you, Sona? It's impossible. What happens is I go to Bitcoin and I drag the amount over into the box that says Sona, and then I drop it there, and that's how it goes in.
You do a drag and drop.
I do a drag and drop.
Oh,
yeah.
for Bitcoin, and that's how I pay you in Bitcoin. I'm going to go on the record. I am, as you can tell, and if you're a regular listener, you know this for a fact. I think that if you had an old preacher get into a time machine in 1811 and come out into the world now, that old preacher would understand technology better than I do. Don't you think? Yeah. I honestly don't know. I write in little notebooks. I'm afraid of my computer. I don't really understand what's happening. But I am surrounded by people who really understand it very well. Will Becton is sitting just feet from me. Will, hats off to you. You do a great job. He came to my house to turn on the computer for me. Because, and we don't know why, but when I do it, blue foam comes out. We don't even know what that foam is, but Will Becton comes all the way. He lives very far from where I live in a rural dairy farm country, I believe, just based on his hat and his overall appearance, deep, deep in dairy country. And he drives here in what appears to be a covered wagon, and he comes into my house and he takes care of everything so I don't touch any buttons. Because isn't this true, Matt? We've recorded episodes where it turned out that it stopped recording seconds in because I maybe accidentally touched a button.
Yeah, or there's something about the frequency of your voice that just fried the circuitry of the computers and stuff like that. Okay. I don't mean that you have a bad frequency. It's just there's something.
You know,
about
I'm sensitive about my voice. I'm very sensitive. Well, I don't
heard
like
you talk about it before, but I didn't mean it that way.
Oh, how did you mean it? You said my voice can destroy.
Well, I didn't mean
actually
that your
destroy
voice
circuitry.
Was bad.
Okay, what is it about?
I was just going with your bit, Dad.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I'd like to go now.
I don't think so.
He said, Dad.
I'm going to sit at this table in the kitchen wearing a V-necked white T-shirt, drink more gin, and harangue you as your angry father figure.
I was just hoping to go out with the fellas tonight.
You're not going anywhere. You'll stay here and tell me what's wrong about my voice. Anywho, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all the help I get. I'm surrounded by very brilliant dairy farmers who also understand technology.
Well, since Will's been coming to your house too, you've been in a much happier mood.
Right, because you can hear me. We might even have tape of it, but you can hear me just going like, what? Wait a minute. No, it says it didn't record.
Yeah.
And I've just signed off. Remember that podcast we did with J.D. Salinger, the only time he'd ever been interviewed?
Yeah.
And I did a whole podcast with him, and I asked him all the stuff everyone's ever wanted to ask him, like, who is Holden Caulfield? What's the inspiration? And he revealed everything.
Yeah.
And he went, and it was like a four-hour podcast, and it was just, and then at the end, I realized I hadn't pressed record on my end, and he died the next day. Just total coincidence. And we didn't have it, and we've never aired that because of technology. And that's when I said, I need someone who's very good at tech, but also has the appearance of a dairy farmer and the overall manner of a humble backwoodsman to come and set up my computer and press all the buttons so that if there is a mistake, it's not on me. And I'm in a much better mood.
Yeah.
It's true. It has been, coming to work's been easier. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? J.D. Salinger was recording on his end. So we got him to send us hours before he died. We got him to FedEx us his side of the tape, which would have been invaluable. And Sona got it and thought it was a screener for a Jumanji movie, and she shred it. And so that's how that got lost.
That's my fault.
Yeah, that was your fault. You shred it, and it said, from J.D. Salinger, and then in parentheses, he wrote, last interview ever. I don't know how he knew he was going to pass.
And he FedExed it.
And then he went to the FedEx place. Many people think, that it was coming back from the FedEx place mailing that to you that he expired. Famously, he collapsed in front of a FedEx unit.
What? You couldn't think of the word.
What's it called?
Okay, Pop?
Is it a shop?
Facility?
Is it an office? I didn't want to say facility. An office
branch?
Doesn't sound right. Branch. That's what I should have said. Listen to that. You can hear, if you slow that down, you can hear my mind say, what's the available word? And it's just not there. So I said, unit.
The most nondescript universal word you could use for any item.
Yeah. You know what? If you keep listening, because this is clearly degenerative. If you hear this podcast in a year, I'm going to say, yesterday I was talking to my kids, my daughter, Nev, and Unit. I'm not going to know my son Beckett's name or that even that he's my son. I'm just going to pause. You're going to hear my brain try to find it. And I'm just going to say Unit. Yeah. And then a year after that, I'll be like, this is Unit. Welcome to Unit.
When you get to that point, Conan, that's when I'm going to rob you blind.
She's being sarcastic.
I think that you just, as long as I warn you, I feel like it's okay. But when you start saying Unit a lot, that's when I'm going to be like, hey,
you know what the trick
is?
Sign
this document.
Sona, the trick is to become my manager because then that's the trick is to say, I manage Conan O'Brien now. And they'll say, yeah, we heard he lost his mind and he just says Unit all the time and he's not available for things. And you go like, nope, he's ready to go. I get 70%. Yeah. And he's going to host the MTV Movie Awards. And I come out, you lead me out, and I'm slimed. Or is that Nickelodeon?
That's Nickelodeon. Conan, what's happening?
Oh, come on. That's fair. Okay.
What?
Yes. I think me having terrible, like literally something's gone wrong with my mind, and all I can say is Unit and walking out because Sona booked me to do a Nickelodeon event, and then a bunch of slime drops. They say, here he is, Conan O'Brien, and I come out, and Sony, you lead me out, and then you give me a little cracker so that I'll stay, and I stay there, and then I see the light go on, and I go, Unit, and then green slime drops on me.
Yeah.
That's my future. That's me in 8 years. And you get, then they give you the suitcase of money.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
No, I've earned it.
And then you put me to bed, but you don't get the slime off of me first. You just put me to bed with the slime on. And even your own husband, you go home and your husband's like, that was weird with Conan. He just came out and he said Unit and then slime dropped on him and then they went to black. Is he okay? I don't know. I took him home and put him to bed. Oh, well, who showered him? No one. Yeah. He went to bed with the slime. And Tack's like, that stuff's toxic. I should know.
Why should he know? Why should he know?
Why should Tack know about toxic things?
Yes.
Why do you think?
Chernobyl.
That's a terrible thing. So he went to a summer camp near Chernobyl. Growing up, that doesn't mean he knows about toxic things. That's not even a funny thing to make a joke about, Sona. That's terrible. Let's move on.
I can't wait to rob you blind. I can't wait to take everything you have when
Please.
You're unable
Please.
To fight me.
I have to get on to the next unit. And what a unit it is. My guest today is a 2-time Academy Award winning actor. Wow. He beat me by 2 Oscars. Who has starred in such movies as Milk, Mystic River, I Am Sam, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's also led humanitarian efforts over the years through his nonprofit organization, CORE, which is the subject of a new documentary, Citizen Penn, on Discovery+. He's always a fascinating conversation. I'm thrilled he's with us today. Sean Penn, welcome. How are you? How you doing?
I'm well. I'm very well.
Something was occurring to me today. I have talked to you, and this is a compliment, and I will say you are unique in that I never know exactly what the rhythm is going to be, and I always enjoy it because the times I've interviewed you, I don't know when the laughs are coming, when you're going to be silly, when you're going to be serious, and I don't know what's happening, and it's just I get on the Sean Penn wave, and I ride, and I really enjoy it. It's fun.
Well, I think I have an explanation for that. I saw it on the news today as the thing was going by on at the bottom of the image where they talk about lack of sleep, and in your 50s, 60s, 70s, that you're more prone towards dementia. And I think what you've been facing is, you know, this impending neurological issue. So things shift depending upon my sleep patterns.
I've heard you're an insomniac. Is that true?
Yeah, it's a problem I have. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. When you say insomniac, meaning when do you get to sleep usually?
Between 11 and 1 lately.
Okay. And then how much do you sleep?
About 2 hours, then up for 2 hours, then back for an hour and a half, then up. Usually try to collect at least 5 hours, sometimes 7.
Now, is it true you go clubbing in the 2 hours you're up? Because that can interfere with your sleep pattern.
Yes, that's not the case.
I'm just saying.
No, unless my den and forensic files is clubbing.
Because I've had a camera on you, and you do, you're not aware of it, but you go clubbing and you party hard in the two hours that you're up. And that is hurting your sleep pattern. That's creating a lot of neurological activity.
Yeah. Oh, that's a sleep. They call that a sleep study, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have been my sleep study now for about 5 years. You know, they did say, it just came out yesterday, that neurological issues can show up if you're not getting enough sleep.
Yeah, I'm here to prove it.
I've always found you to be very cogent. I do not think you have a neurological issue.
Right,
if you do want to go to sleep, are you doing anything before you go to sleep that's harming you? Meaning, are you watching television? Are you watching a screen? Are you reading a Kindle off a screen? Are you looking at the internet?
Vodka, murder, and cigarettes. I'm watching, you know, crime shows with a vodka tonic and a cigarette. So yes, I probably am not doing all that I should do to get a good night's sleep.
I love a crime show. Are you, you love a crime show? You love a crime documentary?
Yeah, I'm, I try to, I sort of eat them, with the exception, I find, especially lately, I don't respond that well when the cases surround children.
Yes,
everything else
yes.
I'm fascinated with.
Yeah. Sona, you relate to this because you love true
crime.
It. I love true crime, and I feel as if, now maybe I'm wrong, but I used to feel badly about watching so much true crime, and I thought, well, this is voyeuristic. I shouldn't be doing this. But I think it's made me a very good detective. I think I really do think that I have become. I've so studied crime now. I've studied crime more than most criminologists. And so, and if you've done the same, Sean, we could solve crimes together. We could open a detective agency in Malibu and you and I could solve crimes.
Or it would perpetuate them.
Well, how about both? How about we commit the crimes on a Thursday night and then we solve them on a Friday night? We'd be legends. We'd be absolute legends. You know I'm going to waste your time today. You know that. You understand that.
I don't feel that at all.
You know what occurred to me? Because you are so well known for traveling the world and really getting in there, getting waist deep in whatever's happening and helping out, that it occurred to me today, is it even possible for you to go to an upscale hotel and chill? Are you able to do that? Because God forbid someone took a picture of you with two cucumber slices on your eyes drinking a margarita. It feels like, no, Sean Penn can't do that. He's got to be in the thick of it constantly, all the time.
I take the risk. I do. When I get, have a moment to have cucumber slices on my eyes, I take it, and so be it. If somebody snaps a quiet cell phone picture and puts it out there, letting the world know how self-caring I am.
Because we don't hear a lot about your moisturizing regimen, the stretches you do.
But you see the results of it.
I see the results. You look fantastic. You look absolutely fantastic. I think we are of a similar vintage. And I grew up in Boston. You grew up making short films here in LA and Malibu. Do you ever show those films? Do those films exist? Are they seen? These are films that you made with like Emilio Estevez, Charlie Sheen. Would you ever show those?
Yes. Allegedly, one of them still exists in a back room at Emilio Estevez's house, though he says that he's searched for it, not found it. All the other films that I made in high school were the victims of a house fire in one of the Santa Monica Mountains burned down one of the many times. So I don't have copies of any of those.
Would you be fascinated to see yourself at that age acting, or would you rather not?
I have a kind of muscle memory of it. You know, I kind of have a sense of that time. And it was a period where I felt that I was, you know, without any previous to doing any training or even having made any kind of conscious decision to be an actor, it was a period of sort of finding that if not anything else, I had an ability to be reasonably naturalistic. And I think that that gave me a kind of interest in seeing how it would be pushed further with any kind of foundational understanding of how to approach characters and move to characters rather than only having characters move towards me. So yeah, I do remember finding a kind of easiness with things at that time that was a sort of a seed of confidence to go forward.
Well, it's almost that concept that when you start to learn things, it can, I'm not going to say ruin it because it doesn't ruin it, but when you start to train and learn, They always say, it's that famous saying about kids, why are kids drawing so great? It's because they know when to stop.
And I think holding on to that initial thing is really important. And then, you know, it's a very fragile period as you begin. And I think that, you know, a lot of actors and probably artists in other areas are injured by some of, you know, depending upon how lucky you are to stumble into a teacher or a mentor who understands that at the end of the day, the process is whatever works.
Right.
And you keep what's working and then add some colors to it if you can.
I know that in comedy, when I was young, I just loved making people laugh. And then I started to learn, learn what the rules are of comedy. And it took me a long time to realize that people were making up names for things and rules almost to justify that this was a craft that you needed to learn. And yeah, there's stuff that you need to learn, but I almost felt like, no, this is getting in the way.
I'm glad you brought up comedy because it's something I hope we'll talk about just because of the times that we're living in and how difficult it must. I'm so interested right now in how comedians are looking at the new world and the opportunities to express without being instantly, quote unquote, canceled and so on. It's a tricky time, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. I'm happy to talk about that. It's there have been a lot of different, obviously, reactions to what should comedy be doing right now. And I know people in comedy, people that do the job that I do, that clearly feel like there's so much that's happening that doesn't feel funny, that they feel like it's their job to speak out about those things. And I think, yes, that's great, but it's easy for that to just turn into anger and outrage, and then you're not, I feel like you're losing your way as a comedian. And mm-hmm. I think that's what gets so tricky right now is the job is how can I reflect some of what's happening around me? But also for me, I just know that I serve at the altar of silliness and comedy, and that's what I need to get back to. That's what I need to try. And that's where my strength comes. And that means sometimes I have to be honest with you, there are times where the news is such that I feel like my comedy can't almost have anything to do with it. And some people might say, well, that's a cop out. You should make your comedy about what's happening right now. And I think I just don't have, frankly, I don't have that ability. There are times where it's embarrassing to be in show business. You know, there are times where I've had the experience traveling the world and not a iota as much as you have, but I've been to some pretty intense places and I've thought, is entertaining really of any importance in the face of the problems that these people have here and right now? And it can really rattle your confidence in what you're doing. And I think that that's probably true for actors as well. There are times where you think, is being in a movie really moving the puzzle piece forward? Is this what I should be doing? And I think clearly you've somewhat wrestled with that.
No question. I think in daily, and it's why, you know, with humor, of course, I think, you know, we do find that it's so essential to in every culture and in any kind of current or long-term healing process. What you said just a moment ago is the big question is when we see a world that's, you know, in the state that ours is today, you take your whole lifetime, whoever that is, in whatever your work is, and you wonder if any of it has helped to move anything forward when right. so often things seem as though they're going backward and into some kind of anarchy and so much hatred and so on. It is kind of interesting to consider that sometimes these things are cyclic and that whatever the creative process is and whatever that offering is, at times is most potent reflecting those things going on in society. And other times it has to be led by what society is aspiring to at given moments, and
right.
finding that balance. When you've been, you know, in my case, I've typically been more interested in, you know, dramas that shine light on very challenging things in our culture, and yet today to do that is often, you have to question whether or not in doing that at this moment you're just perpetuating it.
I had I had an experience you're aware of, but I do travel shows, and I did a travel show a number of years ago to Haiti, which I know is a very important place to you. And there's so much poverty in Haiti and still recovering from just a devastating earthquake in 2010. What I found when I went there was my salvation almost was keying into the people. There was a small school for kids that's privately funded. I went to that school and it was little kids. And I was silly with them. I just forgot myself and I was silly with them. And they were laughing and I was disrupting the class and making myself the idiot. And that kind of saved me. It sounds like I'm being dramatic, but with these kids, we just made some silly stuff. And that was a joy.
Yeah. You know, here we talk about getting outside our comfort zones. In countries like Haiti, most of the people have never had any expectation or experience of comfort in any lasting way in the first place, not in the way that we would look at it. So it circles back to the beginning of our conversation in terms of, this idea of living in the moment. Those kids you're talking about, when that moment arrives, they completely embrace it. And those faces, mm-hmm. those smiles are not the smiles that are, you know, burdened by the challenges their life has been. They're just right. full with what's happening at that moment. And it really is inspiring.
Well, we've learned to keep the cameras rolling because you never know what's going to happen. And after we were done shooting at this school, we're getting in the truck to go back to a different part, go back to Port-au-Prince to tape a different segment. But the crew's still breaking down the equipment. And the window of my truck is open and I'm on the passenger side and my arm is hanging out and all these beautiful kids gather around and they're looking at my exposed arm in wonder because I am a light-skinned Irish guy who's covered in freckles. And I don't know if you remember this, Sona, but they're all just like yeah. looking at my arm like, oh, what is this that happened to you? And, you know, I love any situation. I really do love any situation where the whole thing is inverted. I'm not the alpha. I am not in the power position. They have pity for me because, you know, they're questioning my hair. They're questioning, this poor guy, I'm the odd man out. And I've really had an appreciation for any time we can flip the script, not just as Americans, but as people, and put yourself in a situation where these kids literally wanted to get me to a doctor. You know, I was there to try and help them and put light on their situation. They were like, does this get better? No, no. Do you take medication for this? No. This is called having Irish skin. I realize it's not attractive.
I think the bigger part of this, because I do remember and did see your show broadcast from Haiti. I just remember feeling a lot of gratitude for, you know, what you have such a gift for humanly, which is just giving yourself to that and to being able to see those kids light up. It's a special thing. Myself, I don't have that in particular. I mean, I do my best in terms of the things that I do and facilitate. But even when it came to long before I went to Haiti, once you become a known actor, somebody asks you to visit a pediatric ward somewhere. Yeah, yeah. There's no saying no to it. So you go, but I'm terrible at small talk. Well, whether a child is ill or healthy, I'm just not, I have inhibitions that are equal with children as adults. And I don't have that. So when I saw you bring, you know, that kind of freedom of spirit there, it was really, it was very moving and fun.
Did you feel like, because I know you've described yourself as, and you probably still are, you have a natural shyness, probably discomfort in social situations, and you did, especially as a younger person, that you always heard, and I think it's true of comedy too, you reserve a place for yourself where you can do anything, and it's not really you. That's why the acting is so good, is that it's a place you can go that is completely fresh, and you're free, and you're not responsible because it's not you.
It's a little bit like singing in the car to the radio. You know, once you find that music and you put your finger on it, it definitely is a freeing thing. But there have been times where, you know, there were, I didn't find that entirely. And then I felt either the static or somebody turned the radio off and I got to keep singing. And those are the times that are, those are the less fulfilling acting experiences.
And is the song you're singing, It's Raining Men, when you're in the car?
It actually was. Well, my buddy who works on film sets as a driver, and he works with me whenever we're schedules line up. My buddy Chet, he and I were, and he's a kind of 5'7" fire plug of a guy from New York. He's like a Jack LaLanne kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Short but broad, muscly, grizzled guy. And I had one of his jobs was to have that queued up in the volume high. And as we came over, for those who know San Francisco, if you're coming from Lombard over Divisadero, as you summit Divisadero, you're looking straight into the Castro, which was the principal set of Milk and the history of that story. And virtually, as we'd stop at 6 a.m, get spicy chicken wings from a place called American Wings, and be eating those wings. And then as we summited Divisadero, boom, It's Raining Men came on loud and clear every day of that shoot.
That is proof there's a God. You know, everything lines up. Everything lines up in the universe. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah, I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere. Endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money. Or you can go after their fortune, changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. You know, it's incredible to have the flexibility to work in all sorts of places, whether it's taking video calls from the park or emailing large files while you're grocery shopping. Sona, this is good for you.
Is it?
Because you're always doing whatever work you do for me from fun locations.
But I like blaming it on not having reception.
I know, but you can't do that here. Working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network, which is why you should check out T-Mobile, Sona.
Okay.
Then you got no excuses. They're America's largest and fastest 5G network. With T-Mobile, you'll be covered in more places with the 5G speed you need for your life on the go. Plus, they also cover more highway miles with 5G than anybody else. Check it out if you don't believe me. Hey, Blay, you've got T-Mobile, right?
I do. I was actually just up in the woods in Idlewild. It was fantastic for the weekend, and my T-Mobile didn't miss it. My T-Mobile phone didn't miss it.
You know, I wouldn't think you'd need a cell phone because you speak so loudly into a microphone.
Well, I had to look some stuff up.
Just take it down.
I didn't know when brunch was.
I can hear him.
When the restaurant's open for brunch.
Okay.
So I used my T-Mobile coverage to check
terrific,
out brunch.
Boy. That's all right. Anyway, wherever you are, you know, take it from the loud-speaking Blay. If you're on the go, you want to be in the know, you want to make the show.
What?
T-Mobile.
Okay.
That's the one for you.
That was weird.
I should have rhymed it with go. Anyway, find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today. Coverage not available in some areas. Fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data Q3 2023. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. You can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. Sounds pretty good, huh? Doesn't it, Sona?
I like that.
Yeah, you like it. This means you can earn on what you want, like
trying out the new workout class and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. You're always asking about a foam roller.
Yeah, I love to work out.
And use a foam roller. And that's the beauty.
Foam it up.
That's foam it up. That's the beauty of the Active Cash credit card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash credit card. That's real life ready. I don't know where they come up with these things. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash. I'm tough on biographical films because I always think a good documentary can usually tell the story better. And I thought an exception was Milk. I really did think that I have seen documentaries about Harvey Milk in that era and that tragedy, but I actually thought the movie gave me a better insight than any documentary could. I don't know why that's true. You know, your performance obviously was fantastic, but I don't want to give you credit because I'm talking to you right now. It must be someone else.
It was a lot. I think a lot of that movie, and I feel very lucky to have been part of it with Gus Van Sant and Austin Lance Black's script and so on. But it brings up an interesting point, another one that I think about a lot these days. You know, but today, almost certainly I would not be permitted to be cast in that role. We're living in a time where if you're playing a lead character, you would have to be a gay man or a trans character. And there have been these casting issues. And I, you know, it does go back to, again, some of what we were talking about earlier in terms of finding the balance when you have a period of evolution that certainly has an opportunity for people who had less opportunities to move forward. Mm-hmm. That has to be supported. And yet, in this pendulum swing society that we're in, you wonder at some point if only Danish princes can play Hamlet.
Right.
It is, I believe, too restrictive. People are looking for gotcha moments and to criticize. And it is mostly those on the sidelines, those who are not otherwise getting work, be they white, black, male, female.
Right.
But when I have conversations with colleagues of all stripes on a private basis, it is almost universally agreed on. And it's only when people stand up at podiums that this becomes this very militant view about it. And the only position anyone can take is to sort of sit back and keep listening and keep watching and seeing where balance can be achieved.
What you're talking about is, I think, what I find. I've always liked nuance. I've always thought that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. That's probably the way just I'm geared. I like to really think about things before I decide. I have found there's a pressure, and I'm sure you felt the same thing, but there are moments where there's a demand for people in the public eye to behave a certain way or wear a certain t-shirt with a certain slogan. I always find it confusing because if I do something performative that everyone else is doing, it looks almost like I'm trying to get praise for having just a moral belief, which makes me uncomfortable, you know?
It's what they call virtue signaling. Right?
Yeah, it's virtue signaling.
Or perceived as such.
Yeah, or perceived as such. And I think it can get to be – the nuance can get bled out of things. And you can feel that I get uncomfortable when I think that everyone is getting an email that says, this is the thing everyone should say today, especially if you're in the public eye or you need to post this. And so often, you know, we've seen it, you know, fail spectacularly where someone during the height of the Black Lives movement several months ago – right after George Floyd's killing, you know, someone had the idea, let's just black out everyone should black out their social media page. And I'm sure there was a good feeling behind it, but a lot of people in the Black community said, no, this is actually not helping. This isn't doing anything. And this is actually keeping other sites that are trying to talk about this. It's taking attention away from them, and it's not what we want. And I don't know. It's such a confusing time, and you're right that it's a really good question. I really love the movie Milk, and I loved your performance in it. And
that is a performance that would not happen today. What does that mean? I don't disagree with that, but I also think the whole, it's really fascinating when it comes to acting, because acting is all about inhabiting, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis couldn't make My Left Foot, you know,
right.
And that's a fantastic,
right.
ground-changing performance. So many, and so much of acting, as you know a lot better than I do, is about suspension of disbelief and transforming yourself. And so, yeah, we may find that this pendulum swing has to be re-examined in some of these areas. But
yes, because also it takes away an opportunity for actors, be it what Daniel did so brilliantly in that movie or any opportunities that I have had. You know, there is something in having, in embodying a certain kind of empathy for whether it's in his case, a handicapped person, or if mm-hmm. somebody is gay and therefore marginalized, oppressed, to step into that and is, I think, something that really draws a lot of creative energy. And what's happened now is that in place of creative energy, we're all sort of burdened with the energy and concern of optics. And it becomes kind of a broken record that really doesn't jive with us cellularly as people. And so yet maybe all it is again, this cyclic thing where, well, you know, maybe this is time for actors, comedians, where we have to say, hey, this moment isn't our turn for that entire creative freedom, and believe enough that it'll come back, that
right.
That the playing field will level in a productive way, and that there'll be more freedom as long as it is coming out of an understanding and empathy, a solidarity, that we'll have more of that freedom come back, and but that we'll be sharing that stage with more people doing the same who haven't had the opportunity before. That's it. That's the hope.
Well, I've always described myself as like I'm a 52% optimist. And I do believe that everything that's happened in the last year is going to inform us in the best way, and is going to have a very valuable impact on the arts, and is going to make things better and more inclusive. So I believe in all that. I just think there are individual moments. Like when you use the word empathy a lot, and I think empathy is a very important word, and also forgiveness. The whole concept of cancel culture is, we found that someone did something in 1979 that is now not appropriate. They're dead to us. And I think—
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, what happened to, let's talk about that now, but people can also be forgiven if they even need forgiving. But what happened to that? What happened? You know, why are we? It almost feels very Soviet, kind of sometimes. That
yeah, this young woman who was meant to be the editor of Vogue or Teen Vogue, yes, magazine, and she sent some texts when she was 17 years old. It really is. I remember the fellow who does a lot of the better interviews for Axios was on and saying, you know, when we're destroying careers like that, what are we really achieving? What are we doing? Or you look at it, you know, politicians. I give a lot of a big nod to anybody that's willing to enter the public arena who is doing so because they give a damn.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary time, and it's up to me to fix it. I think that's the point here.
That's Sean. Like the old Stephen Wright joke about Smokey the Bear saying, only you can prevent forest fires. And
I think Smokey should have helped. I really do. I think he should have gotten in there. You've been working really hard, you know, obviously. And I wanted to shine a light on this because I know that CORE is very important to you. And I think people usually imagine you traipsing around the world trying to help out in various far-flung corners. But CORE has been really doing an amazing job trying to, first of all, get people tested for COVID, but also now to get people vaccinated and make sure that it's equitable. When they started coming out with vaccines, I thought, I hope this doesn't turn into people in the 1% line up and get them first. And I think there actually was a very noble effort to make sure that that was not the case. I'm sure there are always people that can game the system, but I think, I mean, you should speak to that, which is, it's been very important to you that disenfranchised people have access to the vaccine, and that it's not just something that is available to people who are in the know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's so many layers to the issues that have opened all our eyes to the vulnerabilities of the public health system, and inequity is a big part of that. The other part of the, you know, on the other side of it, of course, we understand that it's in the very communities that have been left out that there is a higher degree of vaccine hesitancy. And it's not, right. It's not hard to imagine why, if only using the example of Tuskegee, because that's not some, you know, brown page piece of our history book. That's 1972. So that's mothers and fathers, or at least grandfathers, grandmothers, telling stories, through their communities that would give one pause. In this situation, what's really important for CORE, aside from the implementation of sites and mobile sites as well as fixed sites across the country for vaccination, is also the information campaigns, because we've got, you know, we're part of a kind of chosen era of humanity relative to where science is on this, and we have these extremely safe vaccines, mm-hmm. and vaccines that, from my understanding, because of the nature of their targeting proteins and cells, may actually move forward into that which is going to, you know, absolve us of cancer in the not too distant future. So, and I include Johnson & Johnson in terms of those extraordinary vaccines.
Yeah.
The fact that this happened at this time, you know, a lot is given to the warp speed aspect of it. But in fact, this started with HIV/AIDS in terms of the research communities on these mRNA vaccines, and that we are in a time where everybody is going to have had access to this. With everybody in the United States will have had access to this within a year or a year and a half of the onset of this pandemic is really amazing.
There's another issue, which is misinformation out there. And some of it can have cultural ties. Some of it can have, you know, there's, I know people, I've talked to people who've told me, yeah, I'm not getting that. I don't really trust it. Some of these people that I've spoken to have gone to college, but they have biases that come from, I don't know. They can come from really anywhere. Sona, I know you have friends who you've talked to who are very well educated, who've said, yeah, I'm not going to do
that. Yes, it's very frustrating. It is. And there is a lot of misinformation. A lot of the things they say is just not true.
I have a friend who runs a great food distribution center in Lawrence, Massachusetts, Core Unum. And I've mentioned it before, but he said it's a real struggle because I think predominantly first generation Hispanic community, Latinx community. And he said it's that there's a lot of biases that exist and rumors that exist about how the vaccine was made. It's overcoming that. It's figuring out, you know, he's a priest. He's a Catholic priest. So he's revered, mm-hmm. and he's talked to them, and that's not enough. That is not good enough to get people to overcome that bias, you know, against this strange thing we want to put in your arm.
It's an education element, and so much of this, you know, when we started, branched from what had started out as JPHRO in Haiti and then moved into the hurricane belt in the United States, mm-hmm. we started in Savannah, Georgia, and what we were doing was cert training locals for hurricane response, local kids from 15 to their early 20s. The very first thing they taught us was that grandma and grandpa, especially in these marginalized communities, were not inclined to trust whether it was the weather service or local authorities of any kind on evacuation orders. And who they would trust is their little grandchild coming to the door and saying, you know, you got to prepare a go bag and all of that. I do think that the communities are capable of healing themselves of this vaccine hesitancy, because mm-hmm. if Joe doesn't get it, maybe Mary does next door, And a couple of weeks later, Mary's still standing and smiling and says, Joe, you really ought to get that vax. And then Joe gets it. And it's gonna be like that. And with the help of community leaders. But I'm optimistic about where that's going to go. The bigger issue also is the part of this, you know, there's misinformation. And there can also be, in a way, too much information, which was a missile guided initially by the prior administration, where there were no guidelines. There was no clarity. There were only panic being inspired or a so-called hoax being considered. So it's a question of what penetrates people's understanding. It's not that the information isn't there. The information is there. It's a question of, you know, getting through all the debris around the information, all of this madness that has been in the last year and a half on this thing. And I think as the dust settles, and if, you know, my feeling again is that this White House has done an extraordinary job in terms of refining and communicating those guidelines, and the task force has done an incredible job. I used to come home from working the sites here in Los Angeles or across the country, turn on the news at night, and it was maddening because on the ground as implementers, we knew what the simple basics were. The job was not rocket science. It was pretty simple. But to understand it was to understand which parts of it to focus on. And there was so many things. So that whole political part of it and the idea that, you know, the masking politicized and all that, it's really lunacy. And yeah. I just like to think that, again, with the temperament of the current leadership, if we can all partner with that, whatever our political beliefs are, and just find our way through as a country, all of that will settle and we'll get to a good result.
I think what's most maddening to me about anti-maskers, and this is not me getting on a high horse or anything or getting on a soapbox, but what I've always noticed is that the climate deniers, the vaccination deniers, the mask deniers, they're basically saying, I don't trust this thing that I can't see. And yet they're more than happy to enjoy the fruits of science and engineering with their pickup truck, with their flat screen television. I mean, there's so much that I don't understand and that I can't see that I benefit from directly in my life every single day that has not been politicized, and everyone's enjoying the benefits of those things. So why did we just draw a tiny little circle around, let's cover our nose and mouth, and that will help decrease our likelihood of getting COVID by 95%, period.
Yeah.
Why is that suddenly suspicious? But HD television is not suspicious.
I think it takes courage to have any genuine level of faith in humankind's ability to do something positive together. And that this other group you're talking about are the original scaredy cats. They can run around and, you know, flex their muscles and yell bad words and carry guns and all of that stuff. But they're at the core, it's a scaredy cat culture.
Yeah.
And it's a question of how to help give people enough courage to put on a fucking mask and do your service to this country and the world.
Well, we are really at the end of our time. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I did want to pitch you one concept, which is if I can get the funding and I can get the script together, I would like you to play me in a feature length film, Sean. And I know that you're doing you less acting than you used to because you're devoting so much time to helping the world. But I think this is an opportunity for you. I think it's an opportunity for me. It's an opportunity for you to stretch as an actor.
Stretch.
It's really stretch. Yes.
Taller.
you are going to be 6'4" in this film.
This reminds me of, you know, this terrific actor, Joel Edgerton, when he first came from Australia to the States, we sat down for a coffee and he said to me, I said, what do you want to do? He says, I just want to get out of here without having my underpants on the outside of my tights.
So the answer is no. I'm getting it as a hard pass.
I don't know if I can play a superhero is what I'm saying.
Nice. Very nice. Nice. Always wrap the no in a candy-coated compliment and you're off the hook. Hey, Sean, I have to say, I love... I'll say this. It's very interesting because people can have a certain persona where someone might be intimidated to speak to them. And I'm going to put you in that category with, you know, like a Jack Nicholson, where I don't think I'd go right up to them. I wouldn't go right up to – I wouldn't cross a room being me, You can, but I would not cross a room and go, Jack, baby, it's Conan. I've met him. He's a delightful person, but he has that persona. And you have, I suspect people would be somewhat wary of just openly walking up to you, because I think you've cultivated over the years a bit of, I'm not sure how Sean Penn's going to...
Grumpiness, I think, says it. Grumpiness.
Thank you. I had that written on my hand, grumpiness. I heard a great story about De Niro once. I don't want to out the person, but a friend of someone I know was working with Robert De Niro, and he was going to be around for a couple of days. And Robert De Niro was sitting at a table, and there was a bunch of people working on the project, and this person sat opposite Robert De Niro, who was reading a newspaper, and said, hey, I just wanted to mention, I know we're going to be hanging around with a couple of days working with each other. I understand that you have this townhouse, and I also live in that same area. And Robert De Niro just lowered the newspaper and said, no small talk.
Oh my,
and then
God.
Put the newspaper back up and shut the guy down. And I thought, I can't do that. That is not my persona. My persona is put the newspaper down and then juggle for the person for 40 minutes straight while doing a dance. You have that persona. I think it's probably benefited you a lot. But I wanted to say that I think I've talked to you at some length now, you know, 3 or 4 times, and your behavior always flies in the face of that persona. You're just you have a lot to say. And you have, you're really fun to talk to, and you've got an innate silliness. I was trying to get the word out with people that, you know, Sean Penn, you got to understand there's a guy there who's not probably who you think he is.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of you and appreciative of our conversations. Also, you're a generous spirited guy. I do want to get in one thing. I'm just thinking, just a shout out to all the staff and volunteers of CORE who are really doing, God's work, and I'm just inspired as hell by him, and I appreciate the profile that you've helped to give to the organization.
Yes, and I've met a number of people that work on CORE, and they have gorgeous spirits. They're really, and they're doing great work, and they're doing God's work, and pick whichever God you want, but they're doing that work. So my best to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to come at you with a script in the Conan O'Brien story.
I have my cape ready.
Yeah, the shoot will only take 3 weeks. The budget, it will be up north of $70,000, and that's about it.
I'm in.
Better work presentations are possible. They're called Canva presentations. You can supercharge your work decks with Canva presentations. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Just start with a prompt, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds. Or with a stunning template and add images, graphics, charts, and data visualizations from their massive media library, you save time and you wow your audience. Mm-hmm. I have never made one of these presentations and I never will, but there's a reason why Canva is used by 90% of the Fortune 500 companies. 90%!
That's a lot of percent.
Yeah, let's get it to 100%, guys. Come on. Nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations by heading to canva.com.
Designed for work.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Episodes ago, we had a listener that mentioned that they mentioned Conan in their dating app bio, and that didn't go so well for them on a specific match. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
I think I blocked that stuff out of my brain.
Okay.
Because it's potentially hurtful, but...
I thought it was nice.
It was nice.
Well, it's nice that the person mentioned me in what they thought was a positive way. But then the fact that it didn't go well, maybe that failed to attract someone by invoking me, you could see how that could be perceived.
I see the person that didn't understand Conan was an asset as a non-starter, a deal breaker. Like, they're not up to stuff for that person that has you on their bio.
I wasn't aware that such a person could exist.
Well, there's another one because we're about to get into it.
Oh, great.
Now, this is from Liam Sullivan and screenshotted the actual exchange he had on a dating app. And so I thought what we'd do is I'll read Liam's part and Sona, you can read the person that he is talking to. Does that make sense?
Okay.
This is terrifying.
So you're the white bubbles and I'll be the green ones.
So I'll start. Okay.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha. I like your style.
Thank you. What are you doing now?
Watching Jimmy Fallon.
Huh? On DVR?
Yes. I don't stay up late enough to watch.
Cool. I get it. I'm a Conan guy myself.
He's not even on anymore. It's been years, LOL.
Yes, he is, LOL.
Oh, shit. What channel?
His last show of a 27 career is in 2 weeks, lady. You missed the boat. He does have a podcast. It's called Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Sona and Matt Gourley are delightful. Katakai is God made her. Good night, madam. It will never work. A cockaroo.
I've always said I'm not sure I would watch me if I wasn't me. Does that make sense?
What? No, you would.
No, because I'm not naturally drawn to watching comedy. I would probably watch documentaries. I've watched the stuff that I already watched.
Oh, I see.
And I'd be like,
saying.
Conan, he's still on? I thought he died. That's probably what I would be if I wasn't me. I only know that I didn't die because I'm me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Kind of. But I think you would watch yourself if you weren't you because you would have the same sensibilities and you would appreciate it.
I would appreciate it, but I think I would only watch me if I wasn't me because I thought I was attractive. I would say, God, that guy's got, he's really good bone structure. Look at his cheekbones and he's really tall. And look at that hair. I mean, that hair even being real. He's got that great sort of Dick Van Dyke silhouette and he's got a strong jaw. I would just be, if I wasn't me, and was someone else and obviously looked like someone else, I would see me and go, shit, that guy is fucking hot. That's like a hot guy. That's the only reason I would tune into the show.
Do you ever catch yourself in the mirror by surprise?
Yeah, no, I don't catch myself. I race to the mirror. When I get up in the morning, I run to the mirror to see me. I'm so happy to see me because I very much like the way that I look.
That's a nice message.
Yeah. And so I have mirrors placed all over the place. I've had whole conversations with my children where I'm just looking at myself in one of three mirrors. And they're telling me something that happened to them at school that like hurt their feelings or like a tough thing they're going through. And I give good advice, but the whole time I'm looking at myself going, God, that hair is incredible.
It is incredible hair, I will say.
I shouldn't have gotten into podcasting because you're crushing down this mighty pompadour with these big, ugly headsets that you have to wear. And you're robbing me of my trademark and possibly my only really solid asset. So we got to figure that out. We got to get on that.
Yeah,
right away.
Let's make that a priority. Let's really make sure that we...
Well, I don't have time to do it. I'm busy DVRing Fallon.
That's my question. Here's my thing.
What?
Yeah.
Younger people, I didn't know they still had TV and DVR'd things. Am I wrong? I thought everybody was a cord cutter now. I thought we all just like would watch, if you're going to watch Fallon, won't you watch him on like Hulu
Well, we don't know that that's the young person, do we?
Well, she said, no, you know what? No, the LOL makes me feel like.
No, yeah. I just found out. We looked into it. She's 68 years old. Oh. No, she was a nurse for the Marines in the Korean War. No,
I mean, her punctuation tells me that she doesn't capitalize Jimmy Fallon. She puts a space between the O and the B in your name. I mean, this is all like young stuff.
No, these punctuation rules you're following really came along in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s. So I think it's a very, very old woman who isn't really, you know, that hip.
The oldies never really got you.
The oldies, we're going to call them now?
I don't know. Like the older demographic, you always had a younger demographic audience because, you know, you had a lot of things that people didn't get when they were older. Like you're very like animated and you're very like goofy. And so they're just kind of like, I don't know about this Conan guy.
When I walk into a restaurant for a lot of my career, old people would see me and get up and leave.
Oh.
They would physically leave the restaurant. Sometimes they would climb out a window rather than be in the same room with me.
Oh, God.
Yeah. There was something about I was this is back in the 90s, but I was very energetic and strange, and the comedy was weird. And I had many old people tell me, I wish you had never been born.
Oh, wow. My God.
That was a common thing. Yeah. My grandparents that said that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, my grandfather said that every time I walked into a room.
Rough life.
Is it bad that I said the oldies? Now I'm worried that I...
Oh, no. They're not listening to this podcast.
Okay. All right.
But yeah. No, I shouldn't say that because there are lots of elderly people who do understand, you know, whatever it is I do. I don't understand whatever it is I do. So I never take it personally when someone isn't on my wavelength, you know? Many geniuses have been... Okay, let's not go down that road.
Oh, God.
I think people should not reference me in... their dating apps. I think it's a mistake. You know, what if this could have been the perfect love match, but then because this guy doubled down on Conan O'Brien, he blew it.
But I think he's putting his cards out on the table. This is what matters to him, and he needs someone that will appreciate that.
You know? I'm telling my fans, if you want to carry on the species, if you want to procreate, stop mentioning my name. Don't mention Conan O'Brien when you're talking to a lady, you know, or if you're a lady to a guy. When chemistry and biology and sexual matters are involved, my name should not be invoked. It runs counter to the pursuit.
I don't know. I disagree.
Okay. Mention it a lot.
I invoke your name in sexual encounters all the time. And it only helps.
Yeah. I think, you know, I would say it, if you really want to test someone, mention my name during sexual encounters.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Just start shouting Conan at a critical moment. That will tell you everything you need to know.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying when you think of any host, actually, because if you're yelling Fallon at the same time, that's not good either.
No.
There's no host whose name should be yelled at the critical moment.
No. Diane Sawyer. No. Oprah.
Morley Safer. I actually think that works kind of in a weird way.
Yeah.
Morley Safer. Regis. Regis kind of works.
Yeah, Regis does.
He's no longer with us, but one of the great hosts of all time. And I think during Climax, if you yelled, Regis, it just, I don't know, it sort of works.
Oh, geez.
It does sort of work.
Well, it sounds like we all got some homework.
Yeah. Wait, what?
We got to find out if that works.
Matt says, doing it. And then with our respective partners and yell out Regis.
Yeah. Everybody, Climax. All the listeners, next time you get to it, yell Regis and report back.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that. Do that. Because a podcast told you to do that very thing.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Now ADT professionally installs Google Nest products so your home is safe and smart. Google Nest cams can tell the difference between a person, an animal, and a vehicle, or with Nest Doorbell, even a package. I can't tell the difference between those things. That's incredible. And with Nest Aware, as part of your monthly ADT service, you get 30 days of event video history. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC.